That's right. You were open to any problems, I think. Yeah, so you probably try again this weekend, though.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're ready to get going on our Harbor Board meeting, Harbor Advisory Board, May 3rd, 2007. Let the record show that all members are present. We do still have one vacancy, and I understand that applications are being accepted, and the City Council will hopefully fill that vacancy soon. Look for approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections that need to be made? Any comments on the minutes? Everybody's happy? I'd look for a motion.
I move that we accept the minutes as stated.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion by Jim. And second. I'm in trouble here tonight. My mind is blank. Gene seconded. I'm sorry. And all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Oral communications. Do any members of the audience present tonight wish to address the board on harbor matters? Seeing none, we'll move on. Presentations, the live aboard permit status. Mr. Algert.
Thank you and good evening, board members. The board requested a report on live aboards and enforcement of the live aboard ordinance. City should allow us to improve live aboard ordinance enforcement over the next year. And I'll read the Chief Harbor Patrol Officer's status report. In September 2004, the last time the Harbor Advisory Board reviewed live aboard enforcement, we reported that there was 27 current live aboard permits and 10 permit renewals underway. We have also had approximately 20 or so likely live aboards without permits. We had at that time approximately 20 or so likely live aboards. Today we have 28 current live aboard permits. In addition, we have 3 new applications that have not been completed by the permittees. The Chief Harbor Patrol Officer's current estimate of the total live aboard population is approximately 50 to 60, based on current and past permit lists and observation by Harbor Patrol officers. That leaves approximately 20 to 30 without permits. Why the moderate increase in unpermitted live aboards? There's simply a segment of the live aboard population that have never gotten permits for various reasons, and those numbers seem to have risen somewhat in recent years with housing crunch and other factors, including the fish and game eviction of the vessels moored in the Back Bay. In addition, enforcement is difficult due to staffing and logistical measures required. However, these efforts should become somewhat simpler with the completion of the administrative citation process that the city is currently developing. And I think the city attorney is going to present that to the council at the next meeting. We should have that adopted by the summer, I would expect. Finally, the Chief Harbor Officer reports he recently assigned an officer as a live aboard coordinator. With input and guidance from me, the position will be responsible for overall management of the live aboard program, including increased emphasis on active enforcement with assistance from other officers as required. Some notes of mine on top of that, and then I'll turn it back to the board. As any of you know that live on the bay or that are around the bay a lot, there's a group of folks that truly are live aboards, and I think for the most part we know who those are, and for the most part they're permitted. There's also a group that fluxes quite a bit, and that's folks that, you know, are temporary, could even be on transient boats, but they're folks who have an unusual living situation at the moment or something going on, and that is a lot harder to regulate. That a lot of times that goes on for 3-6 months with an individual, and so those are the ones that, in my opinion, are generally falling more through the cracks, and that we need to, as we try to dedicate more resources and realign ourselves a little bit here, that we can do a little better on, is my opinion. And I'll turn it back to you and see if you've got any other advice or comments for me.
Any comments from the board members?
Well, I don't have much to say about it, except that if they're going to enforce it, fine. But do they really check the live aboard permits to see that they have holding tanks and whatnot when they get a permit?
The live aboard ordinance that we adopted in probably 91 or 92 does not require all vessels to have holding tanks. My memory of the ordinance is they have to be inspected annually. At that time, they have to show they have adequate sanitation devices or are in proximity to a tied up at a shoreside location in proximity to a restroom that's available to them. So change that and potentially require, like a few other harbors are doing now, where as soon as if you are a live aboard or you're even as you enter the harbor, you are required to put dye tablets in your holding tank or seal it. And there are other steps. Certainly we could look at that ordinance again, or we could look at other steps if we perceive that it needs to be gone into, but that will not be an easy process. It is an ordinance. Would time, and I'm sure it would be a number of public hearings.
Lynn?
Yeah, I was the one who brought this up. And the live Mike? Board.
Mike, please, Lynn.
It's on.
Well, pull it closer,
it must have
I
just
guess.
Been away.
They're hollering.
On a live aboard ordinance, the fact that there are people who move off and on, I don't think is of really great concern if they're temporary. It's the long term live aboards. And those who we know or who do not visit the pump out stations. And I think that is the major problem with liveaboards who are not near facilities, who are not in marinas. And even those in marinas very often will use their onboard facilities and they do not visit the pump out stations. And I'm not sure how that kind of problem could be controlled, but I think it's one of the biggest ones with the liveaboards. And the dye tablets, I think, are very effective. It scares the daylights out of people, since I've gone in and out of a lot of harbors, and I wouldn't think of dumping that stuff overboard.
Yeah.
The penalties are severe, very severe. So it's a fairly cheap way of perhaps controlling some of that. Actually, I thought there would be a lot more liveaboards than just the 28 current permits, but probably because the others are among the 50 or 60 who, you know, are not complete or not full-time liveaboards. And in my experience over the last few years, they always check my holding tank.
Well, and I think that is required in an offshore mooring, which is, I think, your current situation.
Was. No, even in the marina,
okay,
they always check the holding tank.
Okay. Well, I could be. I'm not remembering that right.
Although, as I read the liveaboard ordinance, it's not really, I agree,
yeah,
it's not really required, but they do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, and that's a desired thing. And I take your input about the dye tabs. I hear that quite often. It's, you know, another thing that it's sort of a tone in the memo here, too, is it is an administrative task, and it would take people and monitoring and... But it is, you know, it could be an effective way if we do have illegal discharges, which we feel doesn't happen too often. It's certainly any one time is way too much. I don't want to, we don't feel it happens too often. But if there are illegal discharges and we perceive that's a problem, then trying to move toward the dye tabs, and they'd have to, every live aboard permittee would either have to have a sealed facility or dye tabs in it, and that would be the way you do it. Then, of course, the dye tabs show up as a bright. It's hard to see discharges, illegal discharges at night or something like that. But if with the dye tab,
people who do directly discharge, and maybe some other organizations, the NEP, could become involved in helping to support some of this. Whether it's dye tabs or something else. I mean, dye tabs are the only thing that I can think of that could be effective in controlling it.
Jim.
I just want to say that on the basis if it's fair to require certain standards for the 30 or so that are permitted, then we should also do what we can within reason to make those without permits conform.
Gene?
I was involved in the original liveaboard permit, and it's a quagmire. I think what we have is reasonable. The dye tablets, if it seems to be a problem, that's a reasonable solution.
Michelle, anything to add? No. I agree that there's a small percentage of people who regularly abuse the privilege, and I think that I would like to see better enforcement, and I hope that the restructuring of the officers will allow for that, because, you know, when people go to the effort to comply with rules and they see other people who make no effort to comply, it's frustrating, because there's some there's expense, there's effort needed to be in compliance. And in the many years I've spent on the waterfront, right next to one of the city street end docks, there are some boats that I've observed people living on for lengthy periods of time, months and years. The boat never leaves the mooring, and they aren't carrying a bucket when they row to shore. So it makes me curious. So, you know, the dye tabs would be a great idea, and if there's a privilege being extended to people to have a liveaboard permit, adding a dye tab, I can't imagine that they're terribly expensive, and you'd only need one because you're not dumping on a unless you're
to the contrary, you go to the pump station, okay. You have to get another one.
Okay. But a fairly large holding tank, I would imagine, in a larger vessel. What is your what capacity are they generally?
I'm sure most of them are bigger than mine.
75 gallons at least.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't even know what mine is. I know how long it lasts, but I don't know what the capacity is. But it would be a problem because people would have to volunteer after they went to the pump-out station to get another dye tab, or when they leave the harbor and then come back in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how that kind of thing could be.
Go ahead.
Well, I know that when I was on the NEP board, we were concerned about, in particular at that time, about the mothball fleet or whatever you'd want, the illegal moorings down off the state park. And I think they're pretty well cleaned out. And there were, you know, some liveaboards down there that they were quite concerned about. But anything that can be done, and I think it's a good idea to maybe see if the NEP wants to, if they have some funding for helping with this, because it is a clean waters thing, and it certainly affects the health of the estuary. So, will you come back to us in 6 months, perhaps, and tell us how your restructuring's worked out and what's happened?
Yeah, that seems reasonable to me, and I'm taking it as some of you would like to have us look into the dye tab. I don't think the cost is going to be as big a problem as trying to organize manpower, and depending on how we do it, it could be not too bad with just liveaboards. It certainly is going to be, you know, requiring to, say, board every vessel or make sure that every vessel as it enters the harbor would have dye tabs or a sealed head is certainly another matter. So, asking for a report back in 6 months seems reasonable to me. That puts us in November, December.
Does that work for everybody? I think that we're hopeful that things can improve, but I don't. Is there a crisis that I'm not aware of that needs addressing quicker?
I don't think it's a crisis, but I'm simply aware that I'm sure it's happening, and I don't like it. And also, I sort of feel like, since I've had my liveaboard permit for the last 12 years, it's almost voluntary. And I sort of resent that. As a private citizen, I sort of resent it.
That's, I think, legitimate criticism we have to take. We should do better. and we will try.
But I also, if I may say, I should have said in the very beginning, I'm glad to see that, you know, you are doing something about finding some manpower to do the inspections and doing what you can. I realize it is a problem.
And I think you're being very polite in your phrasing when you say that you think there may be some violations. I suspect you're rather certain. So hopefully that can improve. Am I putting too many words in your mouth? I don't hear any objections. All right. If there's nothing else, we'll move on. And the next item would be a discussion of paid parking in the boat launch ramp area.
Well, can I read this one again real quick? Or is that pushing my luck? The purpose of this agenda item is to ask the Harbor Advisory Board to discuss the concept of paid parking at the boat launch ramp and consider it as you review the parking management plan over the next year. This item will again be put on your agenda for June. With a request that you recommend City Council adoption of paid parking at the boat launch ramp in spring of 2008. Most boat launch ramps in California charge for boat and trailer vehicle park. The old Iron Ranger worked better. So in recent years, we've had some people using the boat launch ramp as storage. They move their vessel and vehicle every 72 hours to avoid being sighted, but they're basically just leaving and you've all seen it, I'm sure, leaving the vehicle and trailer down there because apparently they have no place else to keep it. Not all the parking problems at Tyler and Spark will be solved by establishing paid parking for boat launchers, but it would be a good management move, in my opinion, at this point. We estimate it would take $2,000 to put in a couple Iron Rangers and print envelopes. The Harbor Patrol is already collecting change from the restrooms and boat rinse down at Tyler and Spark, and the office processes those revenues, so I don't see any additional operating costs for initiating a paid parking program. It's just going to take a little more time. And I would wanted to note to you all that, you know, with the caveat that on really busy days like on May 1 when Rock Cod opened up again, we went from Monday the day before there was one boat and trailer and towing vehicle down to the boat launch ramp to the whole launch ramp being full the next day. And that's also tends to be that when the boat launch ramp is full, it's a day when the Harbor Patrol is generally busier, you get calls, you get a lot going on. So it does, unfortunately, kind of compact itself all into the days when you're busy, when you got quite a few envelopes to go check and make sure people have paid down there. So I also included the note from Crescent City because I found that interesting to kind of point out that, I think I might read that, on weekends we think it was especially busy. They put people down there. During the weekends, the harbor director up there, my equivalent, goes on weekends and sometimes does the parking check.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. I didn't think it was that great an idea. So he kind of he lets it be known, too, that they do, you know, it's not always enforced strictly twice a day because it's going to be depending on how much the officers have going on.
But I had a question.
Do the best you can.
In other words, they come up the gate and they grab a ticket and they're supposed to fill it out when they stuff it back in there and the gate opens up. Is that the idea?
Well, a gate control system would be a little more expensive system. I wasn't even necessarily envisioning that. I was saying just will you put up a couple of envelope receiver type, you know, the Iron Ranger thing.
So it's on an honor system more or less.
Well, no, then the officer who's going down there goes and takes the envelopes out.
Checks the stubs against it.
Checks the stubs, that's correct. But there is no gate control. Now, you could do a gate control. That lot is controllable with a gate control type system like you see down in Santa Barbara.
You know, at the airport, how you just take the envelope and you park your car and you put the stub in the window and you drop
your check. It's getting out of there without paying is the hard part. And they'll make you pay at the other end.
No, at San Luis Airport, there's no gate or anything. And you fill out how many days you're going to park there, and then the ticket number in your window matches the
Well, the my only concern, I really didn't care if they charge $5 a day for a guy that's going to leave the boat there all day long, go sport fishing, or mean the trailer and come back and get it. But there are some trailable commercial salmon boats that may spend a month down there. I wonder if you could sell them a monthly pass or something.
I noticed that some of these other folks do offer. I wouldn't agree that that's a good idea, commercial or recreational, to have the boat storage. I mean, the lot down there needs to be for folks.
They may not allow overnight either, and that's just an in and out thing, not permanent parking.
If you can do it so you avoid just being used as storage, because that's part of the problem now.
Yeah.
The other thing I think I would ask you to keep in mind, the reason I put this on your agenda now, as you take a look at the parking management plan draft that I gave you tonight and consider that at your next meeting, is I think you may hear, if you ask that consultant who prepared that, who will be presenting in June to you, that if you start charging for parking without a control lot, especially without a control gate, it may be that some folks will launch and then go down and park in the Embarcadero, which they can do. So it may cause overflow problems, so they don't, you know, if somebody didn't want to, if you don't charge on the Embarcadero and you do charge at the boat launch ramp, somebody didn't want to pay the $5, they'll launch, drive out, and park on the street. Is that a problem, you know, like anything else, or are we going to cause problems by doing something? So that's something for you to think about, if we're not going to charge on the rest of the Embarcadero.
Any other thoughts or comments at this point? Gene?
I don't see much of an issue. I'm not necessarily in favor of a paid parking down there. I think the biggest issue would be somebody who leaves their boat down there and moves it every 72 hours. And if we can come up with some instrument to move those people on without infringing on the commercial guy who's there fishing, you know, for the season, that would be my direction.
Jim?
I noticed that the fish processing table is there in the parking lot, too, and it seems to me that if you're not one of those who are parked in there, would you have access to that to clean your fish or not without having to pay a $5 fee to access that? That would be a concern.
The most inexpensive system with the Iron Ranger and without controls on the lot, then anybody could still drive in there and use the single car stalls. They would be free. I'm assuming that if you're talking about somebody driving up and using parking one of the single car stalls and using the fish cleaning station, there would be no charge for that.
Okay. Because the fish cleaning table at the State Park Marina fell apart a couple of years ago, and it hasn't been replaced. So people eat out of there need to rely on some other source for that. I think that's all I have. The other questions I have been asked already.
Michelle?
I'd kind of agree with Eddie, but on the sports side too, there's a lot of people that launch their sport boats every day, recreational boats. Or not every day, but a lot of days out of the month. So I'd like to see a yearly sticker, but then I guess that wouldn't do much for deterring the people storing their things there.
And we are looking at that, and I think the police chief is also frustrated with this couple of incidents, not just these folks down to the boat launch ramp, but we've been getting a lot of complaints from people that it irritates to see the same vehicles down there all the time.
I got a suggestion for you. You might just put a big sign up there and make it a regulation instead of an ordinance for that particular parking lot, and just put a sign that says anybody staying in this lot over 72 hours, no matter which space they park in, will be ticketed without paying or something like that, you know. So instead of making an ordinance that covers citywide, because that's generally 72 hours, what everybody's allowed, just make it for that particular parking spot. That a lot, you know, call a regulation.
California Vehicle Code.
Yeah.
If that's considered a parking lot instead of a street, I think maybe there's some leeway the city might have. But
if you could require the boats to actually go in the water and then come back out, then you solve your problem.
There you go. Creative mind there. Good. I think that what I'd like to suggest is that we just digest this, look at the parking plan, and think about, you know, whether or not after looking through the parking plan we want to consider. I personally wouldn't have, you know, the Iron Rangers like you have up at the National Forest campgrounds. It's kind of an honor system. Same thing at the airport. You might be able to go to the airport and be there one day and not get caught, but you might get a big ticket too. And if the tickets were for noncompliance were posted and motivational, you know, $50 or something for violations, I think people would probably stick that $5 in the envelope and just comply, because they're going to hear about somebody who gets away with it. They're also going to hear about somebody who got a ticket and had to pay it. So I'm interested in it, I would have to say. And it would also be a modest funding source for the maintenance down there, because the grant monies, the state and federal monies that used to be available are not going to be as readily available. I know that in your staff report talking about demolition of boats, that money is getting harder to come by. The decrepit boats that are out there that you're pulling out. So I think we're going to have to look for local funding, and certainly a modest fee to cover costs and expenses of operation isn't unreasonable. Anything else? We just look at this after we've had a chance to look at the parking plan and talk about it again next month.
That's great.
Okay.
Thank you.
Additional comments from board members? Michelle, you wanted to tell us about something.
Hopefully I'll get this all right. We're just starting it. It's we're starting out with one fishing trip, kids fishing trip, and come up with a steady program where we can get a lot of kids fishing.
And fourth to sixth grade is the target group?
That's going to be our first trip. Like I said, okay. We're just starting, so we're going to see how it goes. It will probably take older kids. We'll probably take younger kids. We're going to try to get as many as we can out. Hopefully some church groups, summer groups.
But this initial trip that people should check with Rec and Parks?
Yeah, the kids that are in kids camp, they do a lot of things over the summer, okay. And this will be one of them. We're also going to go in and give them a seminar on how to fish and safety.
If this program takes off, will you keep us posted? Because I think that, you know, if something like that had been available when I was that age, I'd have thought that was a great thing.
Hopefully we'll have oodles of money and we'll need to come up with the kids.
Good. Very good. Well, keep us posted if you would. Thank you. Anyone else? I was given a handful of the No Smoking on the Beach posters. They're down in front of us tonight, and Mr. Algert has some. They'll be available. I assume they'll be on the counter at your office.
Yeah, I'll take them down to the office tomorrow.
And there were going to be some delivered to either the police department or City Hall. And so people can hopefully get these posted before summer. And it'll make it a lot easier if people know they're not supposed to smoke than having to be told. And that's it on my comments. How about future agenda items? Anyone? No? I have one. The 2020 Vision Committee wants to have responses from the different in the different areas that they're covering in the city, and one of them is the harbor. And Nancy Barta has asked to come to our next meeting. She's on the committee to review the 2020 vision, and they want to get our input on the harbor section. And I believe what she wants to do is talk about what's in the report and then ask us to take a questionnaire home and work on it, and not do a consensus type thing, but our individual reactions, so they get a variety of ideas and reactions. But she'll tell us more about that next month. Are there any lease sites that we were keeping track of that we need to get a report on next month, Mr. Algert?
Do I owe you a report on? I didn't mention in the status report that where we are with the boatyard concept plan, which I think is, I keep getting reminded when I see some progress on. So we're hopefully finishing up the ice machine and could start looking for a consultant to work on the boatyard concept plan. I don't remember Owen.
Not the compromises with some shrinking.
That's correct. Yeah, the Fish and Game Commission led us on to think that possibly they might make some changes and shorten up some of the ones, especially around Morro Bay, but then they pulled the rug right out from under us again. So went right back to where they were and adopted them. The word is now that they probably won't go in place the latest I've heard July 1. There's administrative things they need to do. It may be that these won't go into place until summer or beyond, late summer.
Were you aware of any discussions that took place about why they didn't go with the suggested reductions?
Couldn't tell. No, they really didn't discuss that.
Okay. Gene?
Yes, I've been working on my barge all the last couple of weeks out in the bay, and I've noticed that the bait is showing back up in the bay again, and I'm seeing halibut swim by. So there are some movement out there.
The bay is healthy in spite of the liverboards. Okay. If there's nothing else from anyone, let's go home.
Thank you.